Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. For decades, there has been a nationwide dispute as to whether schools and sports teams should use Native American imagery as their mascots, nicknames, or logos. It's a debate that has made headlines regionally in recent months when a push to end Native American mascots at schools statewide, an initiative that began with the Wausau School Board, failed to gain traction with superintendents in Wisconsin. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. People opposed to Native American imagery in schools say keeping these traditions degrades Native Americans and perpetuates negative stereotypes. Supporters who wish to keep the imagery say it honors Native American people, supports nostalgic feelings, and saves funding for schools. Joining me today is Barbara Munson, a member of the Oneida Nation living in Mosinee, who chairs the Wisconsin Indian Education Association Indian Mascot and Logo Task Force. Welcome, Barbara.
Hello there, Shereen. How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you very much. Also in the studio today is Auburndale School District Superintendent Jamie Delikowski, who turned to his community for help in dealing with this issue. Thank you for being here, Jamie.
Thank you, Shereen.
So during the program, we're also going to hear some pre-recorded comments from Richie Plass, who will share his experience portraying the Shawnee Indian mascot while he was a student at the high school. We'll take your calls and questions, too. Join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. Barbara, I'd like to start with you. What is the task force exactly, and how did you become involved in it?
The Indian Mascot and Logo Task Force was created in 1997 after there had been four complaints that had come forward about discrimination complaints that had come forward over since 1991. Involving race-based Indian mascots in public schools. And things were not going well. People were tending to retain their mascots and force Indian educators who had been working in schools out of the community. And because that's who came forward when state superintendents called for a change of mascots. What would happen is somebody who worked for the Mequonago School District, for instance, would come forward and say, well, okay, it's time to change. We can help you change. Let's create a committee and go from there. And in a very short period of time, the district would retain its Indian mascot and that person, who had, in this case, had worked in the school district for 17 years as a reading specialist, would be leaving with her family from the community.
Okay.
This was taking a load on Indian educators, and we also saw that it was really important that we stepped up to the plate, organize, educate, become the voice that helps to change this form of racial discrimination in the public schools. So we organized in 1997 at our annual convention.
Thank you for explaining that. Jamie, you're the Auburndale superintendent. Your district carries the Apaches logo and has for 50 years, yes?
Yep, that's about right.
Okay. I want to talk to you about the new logo process you're going through. But first, I'd really like you to tell me, when did you or people in your district really start recognizing this as an issue that needed to be addressed?
Well, and it's been a long time coming. Previous superintendents worked with I think Barb actually was part of the process back in the late 90s. In 1998, our district did agree with the Apache Nations and the Indian mascot group that Barb represents that we would no longer have any pictorial representations, no mascots that in any way depicted Native American tribes or Native American history. We retained the nickname since 1998. And that really started the process. In 2014, another superintendent worked hard to give the kids a new mascot, one that they could be proud of and stand behind. And that didn't quite get where he wanted it to get. But now in 2020 and really starting in 2019, Our former superintendent, Mr. Sanders, said it's time, and he saw it coming. So we've been working on this hard since June of the previous year and getting committees together, really working hard to both retire with honor and respect our previous mascot that we've had since 1960, and then to work to give the kids a new mascot that they can rally behind.
There was a resolution that was created by the Wausau School Board president to ban these types of mascots statewide. 18 school districts around the state signed on to this. Last month, the Wisconsin Association of School Boards at its annual convention overwhelmingly rejected the measure. I mean, it was a wide margin. James, I'm going to ask you, you were there.
Yep.
I'd really like to hear, what were you hearing from those who voted against this? What was the debate over?
And we got together Thursday morning for breakfast. The delegates voted Wednesday night on several resolutions. We were a little bit surprised to hear that the vote was about 200 and some to about 101. What the delegates told us at the breakfast table is, you know, it's not that two-thirds of the school districts in the state support the use of Native American names as mascots or labels. The question really, there was dollars attached to this resolution. And what we heard at breakfast from delegates who did vote against it was, we get that people need to make this change, but there's only 30 school districts left that haven't made this change yet. 30 to 37, I believe, have already made this change over the last 20 years. Several of our districts, Menominee Falls is actually in the midst of this. Auburndale is now doing this before this resolution came to light. So what I think the 420 school districts in the state said was, why should we have to pay for these 30 districts and help them out with what they've chosen to hold on to? You know, as Barb said earlier, many of these districts started making these changes in the mid-1990s. Those of us who've waited an additional 20 years to almost 30 years now, we shouldn't be reliant on the 37 that already made the change and an additional 200 districts. We're in a lucky position. Since we made that agreement in 1998, we've had no depictions of Apache tribes or any other Native American imagery. So it really would come at no cost to us. Our uniforms don't have anything on them other than the word Auburndale, which is really what we're proud of in Auburndale. It's not our nickname. It's not our logo. It's how awesome our kids are and what they do out in the world and how they show respect and integrity. And this is just another chance to show that respect and integrity to others.
What was your reaction, Barbara, when you learned that this resolution didn't pass and didn't pass by a wide margin?
Actually, I first heard that it didn't pass from Tricia Zunker. She called me, and I think she was shocked. Because I said, wow, that's really great. That means that 101 school districts in the state of Wisconsin understand the mascot issue. They recognize that they're dealing with an issue that has something to do with race-based identity of Indigenous people and has something to do with racial discrimination. And they are not framing it as an issue of local control. 101 school districts get it. And among them are some of the largest school districts, Green Bay, Milwaukee, Madison. Were among the school districts that had, among the 18, and some of the smallest, some of the small rural school districts. So I was really quite excited about it. I also thought it was great that a dialogue was held throughout the state around this issue that caused people to stop and think and perhaps step out and talk about it who had never spoken about the issue before. Because usually when the Indian mascot and logo issue comes up, who's talking are the school districts that have been affected, i.e. the now 28 school districts that still retain Indian mascots. And they're the ones who are framing the debate in terms of local control rather than racial discrimination.
We'll get back to this resolution in a bit, but I wanted to share this with you. In January, My Wisconsin Public Radio colleague, Rob Menser, interviewed Richie Plass for a story that really put a human face on this issue. Mr. Plass is Menominee and Stockbridge Muncie. He grew up in the Menominee Indian Reservation. He was one of maybe 15 Americans at Shawnee High School in 1968. And the principal, who knew he could dance, asked him to dress up as the Shawnee Indian, which was the school's mascot at the time, and perform at halftime. Here's a portion of Rob's interview with Mr. Plass.
In 1968, when Richie was 16, the school principal here asked him to dress up and perform as the school's Indian mascot. It would be the beginning for him of decades of thought and activism about representations of Native Americans. That winter, Richie, who is Menominee and Stockbridge Muncie, went to talk to a tribal elder who offered this advice.
If they want a Hollywood Indian, give them a Hollywood Indian. Don't wear anything sacred.
So Richie borrowed a fake feather headdress.
I had made in Japan moccasins. My little necklace thing was plastic. I even had a rubber tomahawk, you know.
He performed at two home games. The crowd cheered for him. People from the reservation were there to support him. It felt good. Then Richie went with the team to an away game. This time, when he ran out into the gym, people shouted insults.
And then I can specifically remember orange peels, banana peels, and paper cups being thrown at me. Now I back way up. Yeah. And that's when the guys on the top row started spitting on me. And I just ran into the locker room.
Richie was in tears. The whole experience, he says now, shows the psychological toll the use of Native American mascots can take.
Richie's story certainly strikes an emotional chord. Advocates for Change cite research that shows psychological and educational harm from using Native mascots and symbols. And this is interesting, not just for Native students, but also for non-Native students. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what that research says and, more importantly, what it means, Barbara?
Well, a great deal of research has come to light since 2002. When Stephanie Freiberg's research started. And it was really the first research that dealt with the impact of Indian mascots on Native students and non-Native students. There's been a lot of research that we should have been able to get this from that just dealt with racial discrimination, the impact on black-white identity issues, so on and so forth. But nobody was willing to listen until research that was specific to the impact of Indian mascots came to light, and that was in 2002. Freiberg found that exposure to Indian mascots did, in fact, harm the self-esteem of Native students, and that it created a boost to the self-esteem of European American students. That right there points out that this we're dealing with racial discrimination, because when you have differential impact between groups like that, you're looking at something really unusual. And what it is, very likely, is just the fact that when we have a mascot, we identify with it. And so European Americans are identifying with their own construct of what it is to be an American Indian, their own idea about it, and they are they're proud of their sports team. So you put those two things together and you get the boost to the European American. Native students, on the other hand, are looking at these things and they're experiencing their own identity crisis about how do I balance all of the stuff that goes on around this mascot with me and my family and who I am as an Indigenous person.
You're listening to Barbara Munson, an Oneida Nation member and activist living in Mozanie, and Jamie Delakowski, superintendent of the Auburndale School District, as we continue our discussion on Native mascots at area schools. You can join the conversation, too, by calling 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
We
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward, joined by Barbara Munson, a member of the Oneida Nation living in Mozanie, and Auburndale School District Superintendent Jamie Delikowski. Our topic today, the debate over using Native mascots in schools around the region. As always, we'd like to hear from you, too. The number to call to join in the conversation is 800-780-9742. Shawano is one of several schools that did change their mascot. Okay, they were the Shawano Indians. They are now known as the Hawks. Jamie, let's talk about Auburndale's approach to changing the mascot there. You took a unique approach to this, and that mascot is likely changing. So how did this all come about, and how did you involve the community in the process?
And that was the key, Shereen, involving the community. We started out like most school districts, wanting to approach our student body, giving student council. We have an awesome leadership class that does amazing things in our community, and asking that leadership class and our student council to take the reins on this and letting the students vote. That's what we did in 1960 when they came up with our current nickname, and that's what a lot of school districts do. But very quickly, Auburndale is a strong district with a lot of pride and a lot of community involvement. We have great parents, great grandparents, great people who stay connected with the school. So we immediately got the community involved and asked them to be part of the process, allowed them to send in ideas for our new mascot, formed a committee of about 20-plus people from the community, parents, coaches, just people who are very dedicated to the school district, and narrow that list down and then took that vote of the final five to our students, our staff, but also to every member of the community, even alumni that no longer are taxpayers in the community. We wanted to hear their voices as well. Since then, we've also sent out a letter to every 2,400 households describing the process and why we're here, and act upon, while we certainly brought a motion forward at the January meeting, and the board said, let's give the community even more information. So we've held three informational meetings, and what we've heard from our community, probably 90%+ of our community, is we get it. It's time to let go. It's been 21 years since our kids have had a mascot, but just give us a little more time to find the new one. So there's a very good chance that next Wednesday, less than a week at our board meeting, the board will act upon the retirement with honor and respect of the Apache nickname for the Auburndale School District, but then instruct me as the superintendent to seek out more information on what our new mascot is. One of the key points, Shereen, in that process, that honestly, it's a book that Barb has published in, Native American Mascots, a Handbook. I don't think it was your chapter, though, Barb. It might have been. That as I was working through this process and also working on a dissertation now to write about how to do this process well at University of Wisconsin Oshkosh, what really hit us is we don't get to decide, and I'm getting chills as I say this, what you consider an honor. Mm-hmm. And that was extremely powerful for me, for our board, and for our students. We are an institution of education, and we have to teach our kids about respect. So I don't get to call, you know, one of my teachers Shorty because he's short. And I mean it as respect, because maybe that was my uncle's nickname and I love my uncle. And I mean to respect that teacher. But if that teacher tells me, you know, I find that a little offensive and it hurts my feelings, I teach my kindergartners in Auburndale that then you stop. And we've done that so well with so many areas, but we didn't see it. We were blinded to it here. And it's been a really powerful revelation that first hit me in reading that book, that we don't get to tell the Apache Nation what they should consider an honor. That's their right.
And Barbara, you're nodding your head here. I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
I totally agree. And I love the process. I think it's really elegant. It's right on that the community gets involved and the community receives education every step of the way.
Barbara, you live in Mozanie,
mm-hmm.
and there a push by students to eliminate the Indians logo and mascot was voted down by the school board in 2017. Why do you think that happened?
I guess the time is not quite right yet in Mozanie. For some reason or another, some folks in the school district are holding on to old ideas and haven't haven't gotten the education that they need in order to understand how important it is to support your students when they recognize that it's time to change. High school students are always dealing with identity issues. That's the name of the game when you're that age, is you're trying to figure out who you are in this world and who you're going to be as you step forward as an adult. And so when students step forward and say, this is something we want to see changed, it's really important for folks who support them, parents and adults, to listen up, pay attention, and provide that support. And Mosinee failed at this point in time. That doesn't mean they'll fail the next time. It means that there's a need for more education. There's a need for more understanding. And there's so many places to go with this. If you start back with when school districts started to organize team sports back in 1922, there were no Indian mascots back then. And when things organized, that's when they came in. People didn't know. There was no research. So the research didn't come up out until 2002 about the impact of Indian mascots on Native students. So Native people knew that there was a problem, but there was no research to back it up. This is new stuff that we're dealing with. And people are attached to their mascots and attached to their sports teams. We all are, and we should be, because we support the students. So when the students say it's time to change, we need to support that change too. There are so many things. People have made decisions about this issue very often, just with the idea that I'm attached to this logo, it meant something to me in high school, not realizing that there's no shame in having chosen that Indian mascot back then. The problem is that once you know that it does in fact harm Native students, all students of color, and every student in the school district, because what we're doing is we're teaching them how to do a form of hands-on racism. We're teaching them to accept and tolerate race-based symbols. That's not something we want to be teaching in school. The time has come to change. And once you know that what you're doing is harmful, well, then change it.
I know that some schools, such as the school districts of Bruce, Marathon, and Wisconsin Rapids, retained the Red Raiders nickname for new non-Native mascots. Mm-hmm. Other school districts have chosen some medieval or even modern U.S. military mascots to represent a more ambiguous warrior's nickname. Do you think that changing the imagery that goes with the nickname goes far enough? Jamie, I want to ask you first, but I'd like both your thoughts on this.
Well, that's good, because I was going to ask Barb. I think that's her place to say whether that goes far enough. I did talk with superintendents from other districts, including Wisconsin Rapids and Marathon, about this issue just this year. And after hearing their stories, and that's really what Barb has been saying, and what I've learned in this process is hearing the stories and building the relationships, you learn so much more. And what I heard from the Wisconsin Rapids superintendent was it really was – it worked very well for them that in their community, people understand that this name, the Raiders, is no longer connected with Native American imagery. And in fact, he would argue, you know, you think of football teams and the name Raiders now, for most of our students, they think of pirates, something that may or may not have been benign, but certainly is not a race-based mascot or logo. So I do think that in the districts that I've talked with, it has been successful. Again, the point here is to teach respect, and in making that decision and in moving in that direction, those students were taught so much about respecting Native American peoples and respecting people. But I would like to hear what Barb has to say on that.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think that 37 school districts have made the change. and have proven that there is life after logo change, that you respect and love your student athletes and your student debaters and whatever else, whatever academic teams as well, irregardless of what the logo is. So, and I've seen school districts do really wonderful things with the change. And what James has been doing is, I mean, this is really a great opportunity, actually, for the community to stop and take a look at itself, and revitalize. So, and we've seen this in many, many school districts. And that idea about retiring a mascot with respect, an old mascot with respect to all the students who played before, that's so important. Milton did a wonderful, wonderful a ceremony when they changed their mascot. Yeah, 37 school districts have made that change.
Is that what you envision, Jamie, when you're talking about retiring your mascot with respect? It's going to be a ceremonial.
Correct. We're looking at so whatever happens, we're retiring in school boards. We generally, our actions end at the end of the school year. So we'll retire our current label with respect and honor at the end of the school year and then kick off the new school year with our new mascot. But we are talking about how we're going to do that, and maybe at our graduation ceremony this year, talk to maybe Barb, maybe some other people. I've got a beautiful letter from Joe Sens, the president of the tribal elders of the Chiricahua tribe in New Mexico, that they've both asked us very respectfully to cease using their name as our nickname. But at the same time, I'm going to invite him and others to be part of that process and how we can, because again, we should be asking the Apaches how we can best retire their name with honor. They'll have the right ideas. It's mm-hmm. not our place to tell them what that looks like. They'll hopefully share with us what we can do to honor them most appropriately, and at the same time, honor the last 60 years of students who've carried that nickname.
You know, it's certainly not just schools that have the Native mascots. There are, of course, a number of professional sports teams that have them as well. In December, when the Washington, D.C.'s NFL team came to Green Bay, a group of protesters gathered to greet the team. Here's a clip from Wisconsin Public Radio reporter Rob Menser's report.
When Washington's NFL team came to Green Bay in December, a group of protesters greeted them at Lambeau Field with drumming and chanting. They carried signs that said Redskins equals racial slur and race-based mascots must go. One member of the group, 14-year-old Isabella Saiz, directly addressed the team's owner, Dan Snyder.
Why do you still believe that this is something that is good for the Native people all around the world? Why do you continue to ignore us when we speak out against it?
The Washington football team is among the most high-profile teams to use a Native American mascot, but there are hundreds of teams across the country that employ Native imagery, including dozens at school districts in Wisconsin.
Barbara, you were like, yes, you were pumping your fist in the air. You were one of the protesters there.
I was one of the organizers there.
Okay. So you weren't just there. You were an organizer. So what was the message that you hoped to send? And did that message get across?
What we're trying to do, actually, is get the message across everywhere that the Washington Slur team plays. Because, in fact, it is a racial slur, and it would really be helpful if professional sports would change. So we went to NIEA this year and encouraged all of our Native educators throughout the United States to let's see if we can't protest every time they come. So and raise the level of education in our own communities, in our own areas, and let folks know that it's time for change.
How was the protest received? Were there counter-protesters? Did you get any pushback? Or what happened?
There were no counter-protesters. There were a number of students who came from different parts of the state. So the furthest, I think, was probably Madison. Some came from Milwaukee. Several came from places that were closer, nearer to Green Bay. There were a lot of adults and families who were there. Tons and tons of posters. And organizers, Richie Plass, arranged to have a drum group there. Mm-hmm. The drum group was really important because that draws attention to what's going on and brought people over to discuss the issue with us from the media and also just people passing by. There were some people who weren't thrilled, and there were people who said things that, I don't know, they probably don't regret, but you know, too bad they said those things anyway. But for the people who were engaged in this, and we had young children there. I had four of my grandchildren were there, and they were little too. I mean, you know, we got 9 year 9 to 14.
Okay.
Everyone was willing to and open to engaging and talking with the public about this issue. And we did. And it was a good day.
Okay. I'd like to return just back to that vote by the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. Again, rejected that resolution to ban Native mascots at schools statewide. I know that 11 federally recognized Wisconsin tribes and 18 school boards across the state were on board. Now, James, this was not a binding resolution, right?
Correct.
Okay. So it was just an advisory?
Yes.
Okay. Barbara, what was the Oneida Nation response when this news came out? I know you talked about your personal response. Mm-hmm. But what about the Oneida Nation as a whole?
The Oneida Nation is very strongly in support of changing race-based Indian mascots. They have a numerous statements that have been made by very many leaders over a long period of time. Oneida's always been very, very supportive of the work that the Mascot and Logo Task Force has done from the get-go.
Okay. Barbara Munson and James Delikowski are our guests today on Route 51, continuing our discussion on the use of Native American mascots. You can join the conversation, too, at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Jamie Delikowski and Barbara Munson are our guests today for our final segment of Route 51, a discussion on the use of Native American mascots at our area schools. We'd like to hear from you, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. The dispute over whether school and professional sports teams should use Native American imagery as their mascots has gone on for decades. I mean, this is nothing new. There are conflicting viewpoints on the matter. What would you say to those who claim that keeping the imagery honors Native American people, that the imagery is intended as complimentary and not hurtful?
They're wrong. It's actually a form of interscholastic discrimination mm-hmm. that's taking place.
Okay.
And it's harmful to our students. It's harmful to all students. And really, it's time to change. They're just wrong.
Can we talk about the money issue? And you brought this up earlier, Jamie, when we were talking about what happened at the convention. There is this argument that, and I've seen it over and over as I was researching for this show, that logo changes are expensive. One district was estimating the cost of resurfacing the gym floor, $16,000 for that, and then thousands more for sports uniforms. Is that part of the equation? Should it be, Jamie?
And I certainly isn't in Auburndale, which, like I said earlier, we're lucky that we have not had any imagery associated with our nickname for 21 years. That is something that I think Barb and certainly Joe from the Apache Nation, who asked us to cease the use of their nickname, there's also going to be some understanding. We have a rotation for new uniforms, and so maybe girls basketball is up this year. If we did have Native American imagery or the word Apaches on our uniforms, which we do not and have not for decades, I believe there would be an understanding that process might take a little bit of time. So we have budgets for new uniforms. We have budgets for resurfacing of gym floors. It's something that we do on a fairly regular basis, especially when they're well used. So even if I did have something that was offensive to the Apache Nation on my gym floor, I believe that they would understand that they might have to, even though the board would take action to cease the use of that name, celebrate a new name, we would probably just wait until that budgetary cycle came up for those changes. And you're looking at we're looking at a 3 to 5 year plan anyway, Shireen. We're not just excited about teaching our kids respect and through the retirement of the Apache nickname. We're even more excited about branding our school with the new nickname and really reestablishing that school spirit that maybe we've lost in 21 years of not having a mascot, 21 years of teachers walking down the hall wanting to say to the boys' team, and our boys' team's pretty amazing, so is our girls'. Right now it's basketball season. Check that out. So they're walking down the hall and they want to say, hey, great job last night to a group of boys in the hall. There are people who are hesitant to say, great job, Apaches. We don't want to say that. And we, in the back of our minds, we've known there's something not right about that. So we haven't had that spirit. Now we're going to have, at least starting next school year, you know, whether it's the storm or the whitetails or the avalanche or whatever our community comes up with, we're going to be able to see that group of boys and say, good job, avalanche. Good job, storm. And that, and having a mascot that can go down to the elementary school and shake the kindergartner's hands and print that mascot on our notebooks and our walls. We're excited to have that opportunity again. So we see this as a win for our district and can't wait to see what 3 to 5 years is going to bring us to.
I'm really curious. What are some of the names that have been proposed?
So the original list was the Auburndale Express. One of the hallmarks of our town is the train tracks that go right through it.
Sure.
On Old Highway 10. The Auburndale Storm. We've had a couple of major storm events, one in 1985 and one much earlier, that did some damage. But we also, in Auburndale, we've got these beautiful skies, and you can see the storm rolling in for miles and the power of that storm and the beauty of that storm. Third one is Aubies. Our nickname had been from 1873 to 1959, the Auburndale Aubies. You might ask, what's an Aubie? We get to decide. That's kind of the fun. And then the students added the Alpha or Alpha Wolves.
Okay.
And finally the Avalanche. One of the things that we're going to do as a result of some of our info meetings is probably add a few more nicknames, and Barb will appreciate this, appropriate nicknames. So looking for more of the Cougar, the Panther, the Red Robin, that we have in our neighboring districts. But it's one of the things that Joe said in his letter, and I've heard Barb say, you know, we're people, not mascots. And the Apache elder said, you know, for several hundred years, everything was taken from us and we were called very negative things. Now we've gone to this other extreme of making us a mascot. You know, you've got your Bulldogs, you've got your Cougars, and you've got your Indians, as if those are all on a level. And Barb's cringing as I say it. I get that.
I can see it. I can see it.
And Joe's letter, and I'm sure Barb would say, when are we just going to be moms and dads and brothers and sisters and architects and engineers and workers, just like everybody else? So we're looking forward to celebrating that we're people.
One thing that you mentioned earlier that I keep thinking about is that back in the 20s, there were not Indian names as they were not used as mascot names. When did that change? I mean, how did that shift?
Oh, high school sports was organized in 1922.
Okay.
23-24. And that's when people were thinking about, what should we call our team?
Okay. All right. So I was wondering, like, how did it come about that people decided to use these Indian names, native mm-hmm. names, and thinking that it was a good thing?
I think most of them picked Indian names because they are so many towns and features in Wisconsin
okay.
that have Indian names. And so they said, well, that must have something to do with our identity and our heritage.
Sure.
You know, and put not a whole heck of a lot more thought than that to it. And of course, they constructed really colorful stories around their names. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And because it's fun to play Indian.
Interesting.
In response to that, and in my research for my dissertation, reading some of Barb's work and other work, I found out that in Auburndale, they opened up the dictionary to the A's in 1960 and looked at a bunch of A words. They liked the alliteration of Auburndale something. Sure. And Apaches popped up and they said, oh, that's cool. I also think we have Hollywood to blame a little bit for this. Mm-hmm. And the movies started in the 30s and 40s and then TV and even color TV in the 50s and 60s. And you had, you know, the Lone Ranger and Tonto. You had a lot of these Westerns where at least one or two Native Americans were portrayed as positive figures. So that looked alluring and that looked exciting to some of the students that were thinking they were coming up. And the third thing that I found that caused this was marketing. You know, Santa Claus didn't exist until the Coke commercial. I mean, not in his current form until Coca-Cola advertised with him. So.
What? Come now.
We'll talk about that on a different show.
All right.
Jim, Adidas has offered to help school districts change. You might want to look into that. I think they'll put their design folks behind your choices, perhaps.
I'm writing that down.
I'd like to talk a little bit about education. Earlier, we heard from Richie Plass. He portrayed the Shawnee Indian in 1968. He shared his story. Since then, he's been a strong vocal advocate for change. But he's also the curator of a traveling exhibit on Native American imagery. It's called Bittersweet Winds. He talked about that experience with WPR reporter Rob Menser in this January interview.
So again, being that I was a mascot back in the 60s, I had some bad things happen. So I've been addressing that, you know, for over 50 years. So in the exhibit, you'll see the sports stuff, but then you'll see marketing items, you'll see educational things, you'll see culturally relative items. And so I kind of call it the good and the bad and the ugly of how my name and image has been used in all of those. Now, I personalize it because, again, I was a mascot, had bad things happen. And so what I went through 50 years ago, my grandchildren are still going through that.
Yeah.
So it hasn't changed. I mean, there's been changes made. Schools have changed their name. Education's getting better. But the thing is that it's still an element of society. And so we call the exhibit visual education.
So Wisconsin is one of 12 states that require Native American content be taught in K-12 schools, Act 31. From an educator standpoint, is that an initiative that's working?
There's work to be done. And in Auburndale, we strive very hard to make students the best that they can be. And I've got to give our teachers a lot of respect for how hard they've worked to follow the outlines of Act 31, not just because it's the law, but because it's the right thing to do. Native Americans have so much to offer our kids in the form of our own history and the history of where we are and who we are, and lessons to learn from their struggles and their triumphs. So we've done well, but boy, we could do better. You know, sometimes you're squeezing in the math curriculum and the English curriculum and looking forward to that state test. I say that sometimes facetiously, but again, that's another show. But it is a struggle to find that time to get in those 2 weeks. And I'm hoping that soon, and especially with this process, we can, instead of getting in that 2 weeks on Native American history and Native American present, they're not just a history. They're also a present, and we forget that. We talk about Native Americans in the 1600s and the 1700s. What about Native Americans in 2020? So I'm hoping we can expand that to not just be a two-week unit, but be something that's sifted in throughout our social studies courses and our history courses throughout our curriculum. So that's the direction we're hoping to go in Auburndale, and whatever we do, we usually end up doing pretty well. So
yesterday, there was a hearing at the Capitol about improving Act 31 and bringing it up to date and helping to improve resources and support for educators in the classroom. And so hopefully that legislation will move forward and help to strengthen Act 31 and make it better for school districts, make it more accessible to get accurate and authentic information from Wisconsin tribes and bands about the history and contemporary issues here in Wisconsin.
We do have a Wausau school board member joining us on the phone right now. Jane, thanks for calling.
Well, you're welcome. I just wanted to make the point that the number one reason people were not supporting this was about local control. And we know from history that states' rights and local control have been used to sidestep the issue of racism. And one of the board members from a different district got up and made that statement at the hearing. Excuse me.
Okay. Thank you, Jane. I appreciate that. Jamie, is that what you – did you hear a lot about the local control issue?
Yes, that certainly was a part of what we heard the next morning, that the group we were with of delegates really talked about the dollars being attached to it being the big reason that they perceived it not passing. But certainly in the paper and from lovely people like Jane, I've heard that that's also an issue. And I understand what Jane said about sometimes utilizing local control as an excuse to not do the right thing. But I also want to point out that one of the things I'm proud of in being a superintendent in the state of Wisconsin is we have honored local control, and that has brought us a lot of good in public education. So it when used correctly, local control has been an asset, and it's an asset to how I can do what I'm doing in changing the name. And it's been so much more valuable that our community, our incredible community, has come behind this change and supported this change. For the most part, they needed more information, they needed time, but our community has been incredible in supporting this change, and our student body has been amazing. And that's kind of neat that we get to do it on our own. One of the incentives in June was we want to be the ones to do this. We're stubborn, independent, mostly farm, you know, a lot of agriculture in Auburndale. And one of the things about farmers is they're their own boss. And we like that in Auburndale. We like to say, we're doing this. Nobody's telling us to. So there is an honor in local control, but certainly can be misused. And I understand Jane's point.
One other thing that stood out in Rob Menser's interview with Mr. Plass is the talk of change. He talks about change. Are things changing? What do you think?
Yes.
Yeah. Are they changing fast enough?
They will never change fast enough. This is something that probably never should have happened in the first place, but who knew? So it's not going to change fast enough. But, yes, there's an opportunity here for us to change. And we need to rise to that opportunity. The dialogue that's taken place around this issue this year has been very productive, and 101 school districts getting it is really important. So if we continue to work and educate on this issue, perhaps more school districts will want to take this on themselves and just say, hey, you know, it is time to change.
You know, the students in Mosinee who lobbied for that change, they were not successful. They say that their voices were not heard. Jamie, in Auburndale, your district pretty much had the opposite reaction. You heard, you involved the community and said, what do you want to do? I know you both feel strongly about this issue, but what do you suggest to students like those in Mosinee who are trying to reach school leaders with their views and having a difficult time doing so?
Never give up.
I would say the same thing. Our students are our greatest asset, and I'm quoting a board member. What we're proud of in Auburndale isn't our nickname, it isn't our logo, it isn't our mascot, it's our kids. They are amazing, and they can do amazing things. If those kids in Mosinee are anything like the students we have in Auburndale, they're going to get there, and they're not going to give up because their kids are our greatest asset.
Mm-hmm. And students have been at the forefront of this change ever since we started organizing. There have been high school students at 10 legislative hearings, from various different school districts throughout the state. There have been students in communities that have affected their neighbors and brought them into dialogue. Students need to be aware of this, and Act 31 does help them.
All right, that's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Barbara Munson and Jamie Delakowski. Our executive producer today is Rick Ryer. He is also our on-air producer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at wpr.org/route51. Next week, we'll welcome Republican State Representative Pat Snyder of Schofield and Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point for our quarterly legislative roundup. It's a discussion on state legislation and how it could impact residents in our region. Until then, we're heading out of town.